Hi, I'm David Shevers.
Hi, you're listening to Harry Sideropoulos.
I'm Malcolm Terry.
Hello, from Michael Richard.
Hello, from Fiona Ramsey.
And if you're listening to us, then you're lucky enough to be listening to Radio Today.
Today, South Africans share their lives with you here on Radio Today.
Want to know what to eat, where to go, and who to know in Johannesburg and all around? Then join us on Soundbites every Saturday, brought to you by the Food Cops on Radio Today. Good afternoon, South Africa, and welcome to Soundbites with myself, Edward Chamberlain Bell, and we've also got Laura McDermott and Chris Evans-Smith in the studio today.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Hello. And we're chatting about all of our highlights and our lowlights that we've had over the year. We've actually had quite a lot to celebrate. I think we've had a couple of shortcomings along the way, but I think we've had plenty of highlights on the show. We'll ask you, Chris, what has been your highlight?
My highlight? Actually, I don't think we can start the show without saying it is Madiba week, and we have just gone through a week of mourning, and it was fantastic. And that it has been a week of highlights and lowlights for me. So I think that's quite important.
Actually, the one thing I found, and I was going to say at the celebration of Nelson Mandela's funeral, is I actually found it was a celebration of his life. So I don't think the mourning has actually hit me yet, but I'm actually so proud that South Africa had the opportunity to share Nelson Mandela's life with the world. And I say this all the time, but I honestly don't believe that Nelson Mandela belongs to South Africa. He is a man of the world. He's in the same sort of league as Mahatma Gandhi, in that he is part of our collective consciousness.
Absolutely.
He's not going to be a man that anybody's going to forget ever, I don't think.
No, I watched the movie on Saturday. And I wasn't sure if I was going to, but I thought, let me go and watch it. You know, I bawled my eyes out. And I don't cry at movies. But this one was just so beautifully filmed, and it's so poignant because it was so true. Mm. They didn't embellish anything. They didn't, you know, skew it towards any political bent or anything like that. It was just so beautifully done about this life of this remarkable man. And I actually feel privileged not to be South African, but to have shared my life with him, because he is definitely way bigger than most human beings, and I think he was a blessing to our planet.
He was to the planet. He's part, like I said, he's part of our collective consciousness. He really did actually elevate the world. And looking at the memorial service that they had, which I thought was quite moving, was there was an image of Barack Obama shaking hands with Fidel Castro, and people were saying,
Raul Castro's son, yeah.
I was wondering why he's looking a bit different. Okay, I just knew he was one of the Castros.
Yeah.
So many of them.
But I mean, it's the same thing. The imagery is the same.
Yes, yeah, so it was quite evocative, and I thought, who could have brought those two political foes together were it not for Nelson Mandela? And I think the sad thing is it's going to take a long time before we find somebody else who is, I don't think anybody's ever going to walk in his footsteps, but it's going to take us a long time to find somebody that raises the spiritual consciousness, not only of South Africa, but of the world to the same extent that Nelson Mandela did.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
I found...
No, absolutely. Sorry.
I found the most beautiful thing about Nelson Mandela was, I mean, he really did have a very traumatic chunk of his life spent in jail. And you don't actually think of the gravity of it, but separated from his wife, separated from his children, literally separated from human
humanity.
Separated for like 30% of his life. And, I mean, if that was me, okay, I don't think it would have lasted, but if that was me, I would have come out bitter, twisted, and resentful. I already am bitter, twisted, and resentful. But if I'd spent 30 years on Robben Island, I don't think I would have come out as forgiving as what Nelson Mandela was. Mm. And there's this quote where they said, Nelson Mandela didn't just free the prisoner, he freed the guard. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, yeah, that is actually so true. It really has been a very emotional week.
Absolutely.
But we never know what is needed in our own lives to temper us to the point where we become compassionate, where we actually get that level of forgiveness. So for him, it was spending that time in prison. And he himself admitted that before he went to prison, he was angry, he was bitter. And, you know, I think prison actually made him into the man that he is.
Yes.
And we don't know what we would require to be able to do the same. So life works in mysterious ways, and I think the universe will put us into the place where we are needed to grow to that level.
And he came back to us, back to society, at the time when we really needed him, and we needed somebody to rally behind. So I think that was amazing from a universal perspective.
Mm. What is the one thing that you remember the most about Nelson Mandela?
I was fortunate enough to meet him. He'd just come out of prison, and he was I was an ambassador of goodwill for HIV and AIDS in those days. And we went to Luthuli House to have a meeting with him. And I remember sitting outside his office, and he hadn't arrived in the building yet. And suddenly you feel the energy changed in the building. And the secretary said, "Ladies and gentlemen, please stand for the president of the ANC," because he hadn't been elected South African president. And he walked out of the elevator, and we were all standing there, and suddenly there was this presence. It was a magical, magical, magical presence. And that, to me, was absolutely the quintessential moment. And I just realized I would follow this man forever.
Mm. I can actually imagine his vibration. You can actually feel, because we are all vibrations. I can imagine he is vibrating at a supersonic level that is tangible.
Eyes. Totally.
My favorite memory of Nelson Mandela, I mean, he's made so many quotes. He's done so many great things. But the one thing that I love about him the most was he always had this mischievous sense of humor. Mm. And, I mean, he's met so many world leaders. In fact, put it the other way around, so many world leaders have been lucky enough to meet Nelson Mandela. And he wasn't one to stand on ceremony and pomp and display. He was just a simple man with those beautifully patterned shirts. I can say beautifully ironically, with those patterned shirts, that he always had a smile, he always had a chuckle. Didn't matter if he was talking to the Queen of England or if he was talking to a child in a squatter camp. He always had that presence and that sense of humanity and that sense of humor. And I think that's something we can all try and instill in ourselves, is take life with a pinch of salt. If Nelson Mandela can do it, we can do it.
If you can walk with kings nor lose the common touch, as Rudyard Kipling said. So there you are.
And Laura, your highlight or fondest memory of Madiba?
Well, we went through to Robben Island probably about 8 years ago and took a tour of where he spent a lot of his life. And I think that brought home to me exactly how constrained this man was for that time. I mean, that cell is tiny. I think it was the 3 meters.
4 by 6 or something, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a tiny little space.
It's a size of the studio almost.
Maybe
slightly smaller.
Geez, don't say that. Yeah. I'm going to edit the show very quickly.
It is.
A gorgeous, spacious studio.
But you know, one of the things that he said was that we don't get born to hate people. We actually learn to hate people.
Mm.
And in the same token, we can actually learn how to love people. And I think that is just so profound, because we actually forget that when we're little babies, you don't know what hate is. You actually learn that through your parents, through your social structure, through the churches, the religions, and that kind of thing actually teaches us hate.
There's absolutely a wonderful documentary. I think it was on National Geographic. And they flashed, I think, a couple of hundred images of people from all around the world, different cultures, different colors, different age groups, whatever. And obviously everybody's got their cultural heritage and they've got their traditional dress. When you look at the people in Holland, you look at the people in Africa, you look at the Chinese, and they flash these images so quickly that the faces are superimposed on top of each other. And initially, it was like quite overwhelming to try and like identify all the countries. And I thought, what is the one common denominator? And I thought, we all look the same. Mm. We all look the same. We've got two eyes. We've got two eyes, we've got a nose, we've got a mouth. We might have curly hair, short hair, blonde hair, black hair. We might be male, we might be female, we might be young, we might be old. But at the end of the day, we are all people, and we all belong to the same earth.
Mm.
So, and I think that is what Nelson Mandela taught us, is he brought us all together. And especially, and I think it's quite profound that Nelson Mandela managed to unite all of those people. And if I had one wish, especially coming to Christmas and the New Year, that one wish or one resolution and one prayer, I would hope that everybody else manages to follow in his footsteps and remembers that everybody around us is actually part of the human race, and we are all part of the human race. So there's no room for bigotry and discrimination. Anyhow, moving on, I think when we look back at 2013, we had so many highlights, we should actually discuss and share some of them. And I look at how much the show has grown. I think we started off on like quite a, I don't want to say from humble beginnings, but when I think where the...
Humble pie beginnings.
Humble pie. That's actually a nice choice of words in terms of food association.
Exactly.
Because we were originally the Food Cops.
Yes, exactly.
And you started the Food Cops initially.
Well, I was one of the founders of the Food Cops. I wasn't so much on the show, but I was one of the founding members of Food Cops. So that was quite exciting. But I think this has grown into something far nicer and better and a lot more exciting.
I think so. And we've also got to thank Laura for her contribution. Barbara Gilman, who joined us. Kate Getz, who joined us. Yourself, who...
Occasionally joins you
and a very welcome guest. But actually, what was your original intention? What was the original idea behind the Food Cops?
The original idea was to give people the opportunity to rate a restaurant that they'd been to.
Mm.
And the original idea was you would go to a restaurant, have a meal, and we had stickers made. So when you paid the bill, you could put a sticker on the bill to say the Food Cops were here. And then via the webs, the Facebook page, etc., you could do a crit on that restaurant.
Mm.
So that was sort of the original idea, and it sort of moved from there, but that was how we originally foresaw it. So I thought it was quite interesting.
I remember, yes, we had Callan and Fair. They were producing the show then. I remember my first show was with Callan, and originally they were looking for restaurant reviewers, and I was looking for a freelance writing job. And by some strange quirk of fate, at the same time, they were also looking for a co-host to help them on the radio show. And Callan asked me, would I like to be on the show? And I said, of course, it's a pleasure, because I love media. And when he asked me, he said, you're going to be on tomorrow? I said, great. And I said, am I going to review a restaurant? Should I prepare something? I said, no, just come. And he said, just sit and listen. I said, okay. So I said, I'm not going to be on radio. He said, you might. And I said, well, if I am on the radio, am I going to talk or am I not going to talk? He said, no, just come. So I said, I can prepare something. He said, no, just come. Just sit and see how it goes. And Murphy's Law, within the first 10 seconds as the show began, he introduced me and said, Edward, what made you want to join the Food Cops? And I thought,
ouch.
Help.
If I had had time to prepare, I'd be happy to answer questions. And we don't actually realize it so much because we're so used to being in the studio. But if it's your first time coming to the Radio Today studios, it is actually quite daunting.
Mm.
And I always joke, nobody, and I mean nobody, enjoys the sound of their own voice. So it's taken me probably more than a year to get used to listening to myself on radio.
I don't listen to my podcasts. I can't.
Well, how else do you learn if you don't listen to your podcasts?
I retain well.
You retain well.
Yeah.
No, I always say it's like taking your voicemail message and broadcasting it to 30,000-40,000 people.
Oh,
and
I
just cringe. And then eventually it's got the point where I said, throw vanity aside. You're on radio. Your job is to talk. Or even better, you'll get other people to do the talking. Actually, Laura, it's a good time to ask you. We, ironically enough, almost never had Laura on the show. Because I remember the first time I met Laura, it was at the Four Ways Farmers Market. And we almost didn't talk because Laura was, you make your own muesli, and I was on a high-protein, low-carb diet. And Laura offered me a taste, and I said, well, I don't eat carbs, and I don't do this. And we almost got into an argument where Laura was talking about eating a balanced diet, and high-protein is not the way to go. You need to eat more sensibly. So we ended up having a mini disagreement at Four Ways Farmers Market. And then we started talking about all the things that we are passionate about. And Laura, we're going to chat about some of those things later. And it's only when I was listening to Laura when I thought, you know what we actually need on the show? Instead of talking about superficial things about nice restaurants to go and eat at, is let's talk about the food that we're eating and eating it consciously. And I can honestly say, like, I love all the co-hosts, but I can honestly say one of my favorite and my proudest moments is actually having Laura on the show, because it's the one thing to entertain people, but it's another thing to educate people. So, Laura, big thank you to you for joining us and for sticking it out with us for so long.
Yeah, thank you, Edward. It was, as you say, I remember that day quite clearly. And, you know, I get that all the time. I get people coming through and giving me all their little quirky eating plans and that kind of thing. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that a lot of these things can work and do work for certain people. And but it's to be sensible about it. And I think that's the big word. And you've given me an opportunity as well to, as you quite correctly pointed out, get to the 30 or 40,000 people and chat to them. And hopefully a little seed drop somewhere and inspire somebody to change their eating plan or their lifestyle.
I think you do that brilliantly. What is your first time on radio like?
It was nerve-wracking because I didn't really know what to expect. And you said to me that Melanie Walker would be on the show, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know, I remember watching her like jump out of a helicopter. And it, you know, I thought, how am I going to, you know, match up to that? But it, you made me feel very comfortable and relaxed. So thank you for
it's all the booze he serves.
Must be. I don't know where he serves it.
Before, during, and after. But I found as well is, because when I listen to myself, I always listen to my podcast and I always try to think, what can I do better? What can I just improve? And I know for a couple of times I told myself, speak slower, because I tend to speak very quickly. And also, if you speak quickly, you start to get excited and your voice goes up to a shriek level. And I thought, you do actually sound like a shrieking queen. And then I did a couple of shows where I started talking down very low. And I thought, you sound
like...
How low
can you go?
My precious. I started to sound like Gollum. And then one day the penny just dropped and I thought, what is that movie, Lord of the Flies or Lord of the Rings or Lord of something?
Lord of the Rings.
My precious. And I thought, geez, Edward, you sound like Gollum. Why don't you just speak? And it's so much easier just to be yourself. And I was chatting to somebody else as well. I said, you know, the day that I realized... Okay, that's a terrible thing to say. But the day that I realized that I didn't know everything was the day that I actually started enjoying being on radio. Mm-hmm. And then I started finding very interesting guests. And you get the guests to do the talking. Although I must say one thing, we can actually chat about our guests. We had some stunning guests. But the one person who I regret interviewing the most was Justin Bonello from Ultimate Brymaster.
Oh, really?
Not because I got anything against him, because I quite enjoy him. But when I had him on the show, I just started talking for him. So, and I never realized, but it was only when I was listening to the podcast that he really just said yes or no and thank you for having me. And I thought, you are not the one who's meant to be doing all the talking. If a man like Justin Bonello can take 15 minutes out of his day to be on your radio show, it's just downright rude to monopolize the conversation. So now I've got to remind myself, I sometimes like make a little note on a piece of paper. Don't talk too much. Ask a question. Try to keep the question short and let the guests do the talking. I haven't learned that very well, but we're working on it. I think what we're going to have to do is take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back discussing some of our favorite guests that we had on the show during 2013.
Get great summer savings on groceries. Get a 1 kilogram brick of Rama margarine for only R28. Buy 280-gram assorted Cadbury chocolate slabs for R27. Buy 4 assorted 2-litre Coca-Cola regular, light or zero, or Tab, Fanta, Sprite or Stony for only R48. 2.5 kilograms of Salati white sugar is R21.80. You save R4.19. And 9 assorted P&P 2-ply toilet tissue is R39.90. And you can save even more if you visit the kiosk and print your Smart Shopper vouchers. Only at Pick and Pay, always there for you. Prices are valid from the 12th to the 16th of December, and prices apply to Gauteng stores.
Hello, I'm Neil Starr. Please tune in to That Gramophone Show on Sundays at 7 p.m. for some real music nostalgia, when I'll be taking you on a trip down memory lane with music sourced exclusively off 78-speed shellac records. My music will cover anything from 1910 to the late 1950s. Remember, it's That Gramophone Show on Sundays at 7 p.m. with me, your host, Neil Starr.
If you want choice, meaning you can find spectacles you really like at the right price, come to Spectacle Warehouse at Hilfox Centre, Atterbury Value Mart and Centurion Lifestyle Centre. Park at our doorstep and step into the biggest selection of optical product under one roof, priced to suit every pocket, and we can make your spectacles the same day. Spectacle Warehouse, unlimited choice.
Tell your friends about Radio Today, the station for great entertainment.
And you're back listening to us on Radio Today, Johannesburg, with Laura McDermott and Chris Evans-Smith. I must admit, one of my biggest highlights of 2013 was being able to invite, not necessarily celebrities, but interesting people onto the show. And the one person who actually set the ball rolling. Oh, actually, I remember at one stage, the show was going to be cancelled and we were going to become an insert on somebody else's show. And I just thought, I'm not an insert, I'm a star. I want my own show. So with a little bit of bribing and lots of convincing and pleading and throwing myself on the floor, we came up with an idea that we're going to change the show from a food show to a lifestyle show. So we didn't just focus one guest for an hour. We could actually have three guests or maybe even four guests. I think at one stage we had five guests, and that was nerve-wracking. And it gave us an opportunity to spend 10, 15 minutes talking about food, another 10, 15 minutes talking about an event or interviewing someone. And the big thing that changed everything for me was when the Food Channel asked if Reza Muhammad could come onto the show. And he's the Spice King. I mean, anybody who watches the Food Channels and the Travel Channels is familiar with Reza Muhammad. And once I had Reza Muhammad on, then suddenly it opened the door to get Hilary Biller on, because I met her to launch afterwards. She came onto the show. So you get the food editor from the Sunday Times.
Sure.
That is pretty huge. And I met a PR agent to introduce me to Edith Fenter. And suddenly you start getting all these big names coming on. And the interesting thing that I found with Reza Muhammad, he was supposed to come onto the show for 10 minutes to talk about his show. But, and anybody who knows Reza knows that he talks a lot. When we recorded, he talked about the horses, the country, and the weather. And when we took a break, he suddenly started talking about his food. And to keep the conversation going, say, okay, remember that point, let's get back onto the recording. And then when we started recording, he would say, Edward, I must tell you, when we were shooting in Saldana, it was so cold, and he's got this like very polished English accent. And then he'd go off onto the weather again, and then he'd talk about other countries. And literally, we had to cut him off after like 10, 15 minutes. And listening to the show afterwards, I thought, we have Reza Muhammad, who's one of the world's highly regarded chefs, come into the show, and he never spoke about food. But it was still very entertaining, and it's like I've become one of his biggest fans. We're friends on Facebook, and we follow each other on Twitter. But it just amazes me how one door opens the other. And having Edith Fenter on the show, because I mean, everybody sees this very polished, glamorous woman. But what amazed me the most is, I mean, I thought I'd be very intimidated, but she's actually very gracious. And
she's a wonderful lady.
You're friends with her?
Yeah, yeah. No, she's absolutely wonderful. She's very down to earth. And she's, you know, her heart is behind what she does, and I love that.
I always say it's like she gets her hands dirty. She doesn't just talk the talk, and she's never come onto the show. She's actually come onto the show twice. She's never come on to talk about herself. She's come to talk about the charity causes that she is involved in. And like you say, her heart is right, really behind it, and she throws her full weight in doing things that she's passionate about.
No, I've actually been to one of her events, and I actually found her, you know, she's very intelligent, and she uses her time very, very well. And I think that's one thing I learned from her as well, is that she's very good at where she focuses her energy. And that's, her success comes from that focus. And I think everyone can learn from, you know, these stalwarts of our country.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Actually, when you talk about humanitarians, from Nelson Mandela to Edith Fenter, you don't have to look very far in South Africa to find role models to inspire everybody, each of us, including myself, to actually do some good. One of our other favorite guests, Laurie, you're mentioning now, was Eddie Rust, who came onto the show to talk about, he was living with cancer. Your man has had cancer for 11 years. And I thought, well, aren't you out of remission? When do you come out of remission? And he just said there is no remission. I think he's undergoing chemotherapy at the moment. And he came onto the show because he was he won Bachelor of the Year.
Fantastic.
And I mean, this man is so incredibly good looking. And I thought, well, obviously you're going to enter a pageant. And he said he's not entering because he wants to win. He's not entering because he wants the prizes. And when he was on the show, he was telling us where he had cancer, where he had tumors, and literally how it's actually changed his life. And I thought, you always think cancer, you get it, you either live with it, you go into remission, or you die from it. But I've never actually heard of somebody living with cancer for 11 years. And I thought, you look at what he does as well. He just wants to spread the word. Also follow him on Facebook and on Twitter. And he really gets involved in trying to uplift people's lives and give people a message of hope. And I thought, you know, I always used to think my life was very superficial and simple and glib, which it probably is. But when I looked and I listened to Eddie Rust, and I thought, this is somebody who's also an inspiration in terms of taking your life and making the most of it. Instead of feeling sorry for yourself, be grateful for the life that you have and live it to the max.
I think that's one of the nice things about having shows like this, is that you get to meet these amazing people as well, and in quite an intimate way, because, you know, it's not often that you can go meet a celebrity or an inspirational person and actually ask them questions.
No.
And we're in a unique position where we can ask those questions, and I love that.
I think what struck me about Eddie the most was his age. You know, he's in his 20s, and he's been living with this...
35.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
35.
He doesn't look 35.
He doesn't. But he's been living with this condition for so long, and I think that that in itself carries a lot of weight, because a lot of people who succumb to disease often are at their wit's end, or they're older or whatever. Mm. But he's actually been living with it for a while, so he can inspire other young people to take the lead, take control of their lives, and to actually make something of it, even if you do have something as serious as cancer.
I mean, you think about it, it's a terminal disease. I look at people living with HIV and AIDS, and strangely enough, there's such a stigma, which I think is a cliche. I don't believe HIV and AIDS should be a stigma. But living with diabetes is apparently harder to deal with than to live with HIV. And it's a big wake-up call, whether it doesn't even really matter if you're married or if you're not married. But if you are involved in a sexually active or inactive relationship, go and have yourself tested, because you don't know who you've been with, and worse, you don't know who they've been with. And the big thing that I actually find, even with HIV and AIDS, is it's as simple as taking a blood test, and you get your antiretrovirals. You can live with them. I think the one thing people don't talk about are the side effects of the antiretrovirals. But the fact is, it's basically a pill a day, and a person can live a very healthy and productive life. And I know it seems stupid to have to keep repeating that, but people just don't seem to get the message. Nobody wants to get tested. Nobody wants to acknowledge that they might be HIV positive. And not that I'd really wish this upon myself, but I think I'd rather have HIV AIDS than have any of those other nasty STDs that are lurking around, because I think those can actually really put a crimp in your social life. We'd have to change this conversation very quickly.
Yes, come on, it's the end of the year. It's festive season, merry time.
Just a reminder, be safe over the festive season. The other thing that I enjoyed about doing the show, because I always thought we've had lots of celebrities, we've had lots of stylish people, glamorous people, entertaining people, but I think one of the, actually besides having Laura on, is when you were chatting about something, I thought the show isn't just about socializing and social life and what to do, but listening to you, it's also an opportunity to inform and educate people to live better lives. And one, I'm trying to think who we had. We had Four West Farmers Market on before we met. That's how I got to Four West Farmers Market, because they were on the show. And they were talking about Crescent House, that works with the intellectually challenged people. And I didn't know what the correct word was. And I said, are they inmates? So you look after the inmates. And they sort of looked at me, and I thought, patients? And we sort of cut the show, and I said, they're not patients and they're not criminals. They are people. So he just called them intellectually challenged people, or people with intellectual disabilities. And I actually was, and I thought, just to like restore my karma, I went out and I hunted Crescent House down. We invited them onto the show. And when we were chatting to them, I thought, we always talk about charities and children, because children are cute and people get emotional about children, and nobody gets emotional or excited about people living with intellectual disabilities. But I thought, the sad thing is, these people still need our support, and more than anything, they are part of our society and they are part of the community. So it was a nice way that the show actually evolved, that we could actually have charities coming onto the show and highlighting the good that they do. I'm trying to think who else we've had. We've had a couple of charities, and I thought it's actually quite nice to give them a platform. I always joke, because what are those Miss Worlds and Miss South Africa's beauty pageants?
World peace and
saving the children.
Save the children.
Yeah. It's always children. And yes, there's a special need to look after children, but there's a special need to look after everybody.
Society.
Everybody.
Absolutely.
In society. If there's one thing you could change in the world, what would it be, Laura?
Gee, that's a big one. But I would change myself, Edward. I would work on myself to remove my own prejudices and my own shortcomings and my own bigotry, and actually examine where in my life do I become like that.
Okay.
Because that's the only place where I could actually make the change. And it's very true. The change has to happen with you.
Actually, there's a wonderful quote that they had on the Oprah Winfrey Show, where they said there's only one person that you can change in this world, and that's yourself.
Correct.
And I thought, that's true. Okay, Chris, I'm sure you've got lots of room for improvement.
Oh, I have. But I mean, firstly with myself, but then sort of broadly, would be tolerance, and which fits in with what Laura's saying. It's so important to this tolerance, and to understand that we are all one, and we all the same, and we have so many common features that we can't just discriminate against people, and we do across the board. I noticed with the television coverage this week that a lot of the international media keep referring to Madiba as the first black president of South Africa. And it sort of irked me a little bit, because I sort of thought, well, maybe the first democratically elected president is so much better, because I mean, you know, it's neither here nor there really that he's black anymore. It's he's democratically elected, and that's what's important. So it's that sort of thing. It's tolerance around those sort of things, I think.
I must say, there was one point during that movie where I actually felt desperately ashamed to be a white person. You know, when I saw what we did during those apartheid years to the other races and how they were segregated and treated, and I thought, who on earth, what kind of twisted little mind had to have cooked up that concept of apartheid and enforced it in this country?
Well, it's prejudice across the board.
But it's fear. At the end of the day, if you unpack all of that, it's fear about the other race or the other gender or the other species or whatever it might be. It's about fear.
And religion as well. I find, actually, I'm going to agree with all of you in tolerance. I think people are so intolerant about anything that is different to what they are. And going to come back to Crescent House as well. People who are intolerant of people that have disabilities, but also people are intolerant of people in different classes, or intolerant of people who are poor. And I thought, well, instead of criticizing, try uplifting. And 9 times out of 10, you actually find the reason why people are intolerant is because there's something within inside themselves that this mirrors for them. And
absolutely.
9 times out of 10, before you find fault with somebody else, look at the faults within yourself.
There's a joke that I've heard many times, and it says, what's the definition of a slut? And that's somebody who slept with one more person than you have.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and that's tolerance, isn't it?
That is, Tom. Okay, let's change the tone. You know who we should actually talk about? They say there's nothing better than talking about people who aren't there to defend themselves. So let's talk about Kate and Barbara for a second.
Kate and Barbara.
No, they couldn't join us today. When I think about it, was literally when I met Laura, when we were thinking about, because we had to get co-hosts. Callan was actually, his job had changed, his responsibilities had increased, and he wanted to study something as well. And then Kay, she went into catering, and that took up a big, ironically enough, we couldn't get Faye. We couldn't get Faye onto the show to discuss her catering, because she'd just always been so busy. And I thought, we have to have a co-host. There was one time where I did a show by myself, and unfortunately, the guest didn't pitch. This is something that happens on radio.
I've had that on my show. It's the most awful thing in the world.
Co-hosts don't pitch, so you've got no one to talk to. Guests don't pitch, so you've got no one to talk to. And I think listeners must have thought I was on drugs, because I started at point A and I just never got to point B. It just like everything. And eventually, after 45 minutes, I ran out of breath. And I said, let's just fill up the show with music. And I decided we needed to have co-hosts. And we had such an overwhelming response, but I never found anybody that I really liked or that I gelled with. And I hate to sound intolerant and ageist, but everybody was so young, and I thought, what is an 18-year-old going to talk about on a show that is building up to life experiences? And I thought, I wanted somebody with a bit of depth and maturity, and I wanted somebody who could bring their own flavor to the show. And we started advertising, and ironically enough, I already knew Barbara Gilman. I was doing her online marketing and a website design for her, and I posted an ad on, and I thought she'd be perfect because her business is vocal coaching and team building and corporate training. I never thought to ask her, but I posted an advert onto LinkedIn, and I was quite surprised that she responded, and I thought that'd be great. Bumped into Laura at Forest Farmers Market, and just because we had a difference of opinion, and also we had so many topics that we agreed on, I thought Laura's going to come onto the show and add her own unique spin. And Kate wanted to come onto the show, and I always find her, Kate, so wickedly funny. Kate actually makes me sound like a nice person, because Kate, I've told her this as well, Kate just says things, and I say, you can't say that, you can't say that, you can't say that. So we do a lot of editing with Kate, but I think Kate as well, when, and also with yourself, Chris, when you came on, when we have such a rapport, we've got such a different and not a difference of opinion, but we've got so much similarity in our sense of humor,
yeah,
that we can actually, we don't need guests, we can just like talk amongst ourselves, and that hour actually flies by so quickly. I don't know what I bring to the show, except that I monopolize airtime. But I think with all the co-hosts, everybody brings their own flavor, they bring their own guests, and everybody adds something of value. So I think that is one of the strongest things why the show has actually been such a success, is because everybody is very strong minded, very unique individuals. I mean, we look at our diverse interests. We still don't know what Kate does. She says she's a retired lawyer, but I mean, she's not even in her 30s. I mean, I don't know what exactly she was doing that she's retired from law, but I know she's always busy, busy,
busy. She's probably disbarred from what you just said now.
Oh.
Yes.
Now the dirty truth comes out. We're going to have to get Kate on the show and find out if
right of rebuttal, Kate. You've got right of rebuttal.
Yes, Kate might sue us. I wouldn't put that past her.
Okay. So now, what is... We've done a lot of charities and we've done some really fab celebs and things. What was your favorite show of the year, Ed?
Oh, geez, you're going to ask me questions now.
Yes, because I'm tired of being put on the spot and having to answer.
So. This has never happened before, where somebody's asked me a question. I think my favorite, there's so many different highlights. I think Reza Muhammad was a big one. Crescent House was a big one. Who I really actually enjoyed interviewing was Hilary Biller, because I've always been a fan of her from the Sunday, I can't remember the newspaper now, The Star, when she was Angela Day. And I really enjoyed chatting to her. So for me, that was like meeting one of my local heroes. And what I found so interesting chatting to her, she almost sounds like, she sounds like a friend when you're talking to her. She doesn't have this ego. She doesn't have an attitude. And what I loved about Hilary Biller, can't go and say it, is she gave me an autographed copy of her book, which I love. I lent it to Barbara, which reminds me, I need that back, Barbara. And then also Hilary Biller made the savory... Oh, this is a highlight of the show as well. She made these savory Marmite pinwheels or whatever.
Oh, nice.
And I snuck them out of the studio. I'm sorry about that, guys. And we lived off these Marmite pinwheels at home for the entire weekend. But when I look at some of the guests that we've had, my favorite guests, and this is for future guests as well, is when they bring food. Ocean Basket brought us a preview of their new deep-fried sushi, which was an absolute treat. I mean, there weren't enough people in studio to finish it. That I really enjoyed. And then also, Barbara brought on Gourmet Foods, and they make these, I know it sounds hokey-pokey, it's not a toffee apple. I always tell people it's not a toffee apple. But they take fruits, and they dip them in caramel and chocolate, but the way they garnish and decorate it, really nice. Exquisite. That was nice. And I think who I also really enjoyed was we had a couple of cosmetic houses that came onto the show because, and I know it sounds like an odd mishmash to get that into.
Well, it's lifestyle, isn't it?
It is lifestyle. But I thought, what is the point of looking good, eating well, exercising if you're not going to take care of yourself? And Paula Begoon, I never get her name right, so thank heavens she's not in South Africa. Paula Begoon or Paula something. She's got the stunning skincare range, Paula's Choice. And when she came to South Africa, she dispelled so many beauty myths. I mean, simple thing that's like changed my life that I never do anymore is I don't use aggressive scrubs. She just goes into so much detail about educating people. And what I loved about her, obviously she is here to promote her own skincare range. She is the only cosmetics house that I've dealt with that is not ashamed to admit if another cosmetic house has got a better product than hers. And her book, Don't Go to the Cosmetic Counter Without Me, which I think is online, you can buy it online, actually recommends and reviews products. Obviously, she reviews her products very, very highly.
Of course.
And she's entitled to. But she also recommends other products. I quite enjoyed that. And we also had QMS, which is like such a stunning skincare range. They gave me a gorgeous skincare hamper. So I gave my partner all the cheap stuff, the Nivea and the Pond's. I put that to one side of the box and said, this stuff is special. Use it sparingly. But the QMS I kept to myself. But honestly, it looks like you've had Botox. It was really, really stunning. And then also looking, it's like when you move...
Hang on, word to the wise. There's a new product out called Dysport, Dysport. It works quicker and is less painful than Botox. Just thought I'd mention it.
How would you know Botox is painful, Chris?
Well, I'm never ashamed to mention. I know people who've had it. No, no, I have had it. I'm a great proponent on sort of things in my face, but Yeah, no, it's really fabulous.
So is it injectable or
it's an injection. It's like Botox, but it's less painful and works quicker. Botox takes about 3-4 days to start kicking in, and this starts literally within 24 hours. I'm frowning at you.
Sign me up. I'm very
Is it also made with a botulism bacteria?
No, this is a bovine stomach bacterium.
Sounds delicious.
Sounds thrilling.
Yeah.
What are your views
like
on Botox?
Out of Einstein. I think that it has its place, and if you are that way disposed, then, you know, go for it.
Have you ever had Botox?
No.
Not that you're admitting to either.
No, I haven't.
Fran?
No, you will see. I've got lots of lines.
You could actually see, and you've got far too much movement.
Exactly.
Movement is a nice word.
Yeah. I'm a lot more animated than somebody whose face is frozen in time.
The only thing that scares me about Botox, and I've got nothing, I'm not morally opposed to it, but is when you look at some of these people that go overboard, and I'm thinking of Cher specifically. Cher comes up a lot in our shows.
You've got a Cher action figure, don't you?
No, I don't.
I'm sure you do.
But you know what amazes me is her whole face doesn't move, and it's just her lips. And I'm thinking, how do you, as a performer, as an artist, how do you convey a message unless you've actually got facial expressions?
Absolutely. But you know, that's the point. I mean, when you do cosmetic things, you actually need to be less is more.
Yes.
So it's just to take away that tired look. I'm never going to look 45 again. So it's to just make yourself look fresher and that sort of thing rather than younger per se and line free.
I always say that having a facelift doesn't make you look younger, it just makes you look like you've had a facelift. Because I look at, who was I looking at the other day? Oh, Raquel Welch. She was on the Joan River show.
Oh, wow. Yes.
And she is, I mean, she always was, always has been, and definitely always will be, the most gorgeous woman, one of the most gorgeous women in the world. But I just said to my partner, I said, when I look at a granny, I want to see a granny and not somebody's mistress. And Raquel Welch has had so much work done. Mm. She actually looks, and she looks phenomenal.
As is Joan Rivers.
As is Joan Rivers. Ironically enough, Joan Rivers looks 70.
Yeah.
She's very tight 70. But Raquel Welch looks like she's 30. Mm. And I just thought, you know, I'd like to see her looking a little bit more confident within her age and looking 50, looking 60, looking her age.
Owning her age. I think that's also important, you know. It's about owning what you are.
Absolutely.
And not trying to run from who you are, what you are. It's about their tolerance just now.
Mm.
And yes. I think it's this intolerance that actually creates this whole, or perpetuates this intolerance towards old people. And that's also one of my big things is about, you know, our aging population are very much forgotten.
Yes.
They're sort of locked behind these gated retirement villages and things like that.
If they're lucky.
And, you know, that's part of what perhaps getting back to Nelson and especially the black culture, they embrace their elders and actually see them as very, very important members of their community and valued members of their community. So we should be happy with a little frown line.
Absolutely.
And a little crow's foot every now and then.
I actually like...
I don't mind the odd crow's foot, but as my mother said, nothing is that funny.
Yeah, I love that. I found there's nothing worse than, I think, when somebody neglects themselves. But I also think I look at a person and you like to see somebody who's confident with inside themselves. And not everybody is... most superstars, models and celebrities don't look like themselves in real life.
Mm.
But I think it's quite sad when you see people that try and transform themselves into something completely different, which I think is just as bad as somebody just neglects themselves completely. I will tell you one thing, although I haven't had Botox, I have had Botox, but I don't tell people about it.
Only 48,000 listeners.
I've never told anybody that I've had Botox before, except one person. I swore them to the grave that they'd never repeat it. I don't have a problem with it. But what I've been going for now is laser. I had laser lipo, which is quite nifty. I lost 6 kg of that. And I think I've lost more than 11 inches. But what they also do is they do skin tightening.
Mm.
So literally, they just like pulse infrared light on you. And what I like about it is I think, just a little bit fresher and maybe a little bit younger. I've still got wrinkles around my eyes. No, I can still move my forehead.
But that's experience.
Yes.
You know? I mean, that's what you want. You want some experience, but you also just want to look younger.
Exactly.
Fresher. Not younger. Fresher.
And I thought, but then to what point does one actually want to go when one starts doing extremes? And I'll never forget the look of this one woman that I bumped into in the mall once. She must have been about 70 years old easily, but with the personality of a 20-year-old. She had like long blonde hair that was like pin straight and blow dried. And you can see every inch of her body had been surgically enhanced. And I don't know, I think of my grandmother. We were watching old reruns of Dallas. And I thought,
I'm loving it at the moment.
Actually, that the original Dallas from the 70s is even better than the current one. I mean, those one-liners Jay and Sielan come up with were having
and they drink tons. Every time there's a slight crisis, they head off for to the booze bottles.
11 o'clock in the morning. Mm. But I was looking at Miss Ellie, and I thought, she reminds me of my grandmother. She was elegant, and she was matronly, but she looked like my grandmother. I wouldn't like my grandmother...
And dressed appropriately.
Yes. I wouldn't like my grandmother to look like Joan Collins or Joan Rivers. That would really scare me. Okay, I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
How does an ordinary South African take on the raging war against drugs? Do you buy the deadliest weapons available or relocate to a safe neighborhood? An SMS could be just as effective. Be one of our faceless heroes. Report any suspicious behavior by SMSing an anonymous tip-off to Crimeline on 32211. Your anonymity is guaranteed. Crimeline is in partnership with the SAPS. SMS is charged at 1 rand.
Do you want to keep up to date with what's happening with Radio Today, Johannesburg? Have you always felt the urge to write on someone's wall but never quite dared? Now you can, and more, on Facebook. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/radiotodayjhb or on Twitter at Radio Today. That's the sign at Radio numeral 2 Day. Also follow our blog at radiotodayjohannesburg.blogspot.com. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
There is a code of practice that governs advertising in South Africa, a code upheld by the Advertising Standards Authority. So if you see or hear an advertisement you consider misleading or dishonest, don't just cover your eyes or block your ears. I'll keep quiet about it.
Write to the ASA at PO Box 41555, Craig Hall, 2024, or fax to 011-781-1616, or visit www.asasa.org.za.
Hello from Subi Mboya. Stay with Radio Today, your station of choice. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
You know what? I mean, welcome back. But we were just talking in the break, and I remembered a most wonderful show that Edward and I did when we spoke about the Clicquot Hotel, and it just got so raunchy.
I remember that one.
It was really, really strange. I mean, everything had an innuendo. And it was pretty sexual, and it was great fun, and we had great fun doing it. But I think, you know, it really got to the edge there.
It wasn't intentional either.
No,
I remember because we had, I forget his surname, it was Raymond from Clicquot.
That's right.
They're one of my favorite restaurants to go to, and I remember because he was talking about tasting wine, and obviously when it comes to wine, you've got to taste it, you've got to spit it out. And just as I was about to ask him, when it comes to drinking wine, does he spit? And I just saw that look in your eye, and I knew whether I said it or swallow. And he says, no, he swallows. I think he said he swallows. And then the conversation just went downhill. From there.
And he was a little bit oblivious to it, which was quite fun as well.
Yes.
A lot of the innuendos, so that was quite fun.
I remember you distinctly, you set that question up perfectly when asked him, how big was his meat? And I thought, it has nothing to do with steak on a plate. I must admit, at the very least, we've actually had a lot of fun on the show. And often I've found is... I wish we could actually do a show just with our bloopers, although I hate that word. I've often found that sometimes saying the wrong thing is actually funnier and more memorable.
Yes.
And, I mean, even when Eddie Rust was on, he was saying, and I unfortunately don't think before I speak. He was saying that one in four people will be affected by cancer. And I said, thank God it's you, because then at least I know I'm on the clear. And I thought, and even he just took it with a pinch of salt. But I thought, but then some people also have commented, or they said to me, it's like, you know, when you say things, I remember it's like, Azul, we're promoting Quads for Quads. And because they were, and I said that they were running to Durban. And obviously a quadriplegic can't run to Durban. Yeah. So I thought, well, I don't know what they're doing then. I suppose they're quadding. And somebody actually mentioned to me that they'd heard the show and they weren't offended because they knew people that were affected or had were quadriplegics. And they said the one thing that they remembered and that they spoke about and actually increased or highlighted the cause a lot more was the fact that you had a sense of humor. It wasn't malicious and it wasn't intentional.
Yeah.
And they said you could actually hear that you're embarrassed as you said it.
Well, if you talk about the elephant in the room, it helps.
It also helps as well.
You know,
and I find...
Tell me, now, I mean, do you have as much fun in the rest of the stuff you do? What do you do when you're not on air?
Oh, I hate it when people ask me this because I've got to think about it. I had this, there's a quote, it's not my quote, but if you can make your hobby your job, you'll never have to work a day in your life. And
well, that's nice.
I thought so too. And I just, and I've never known what I wanted to do as a career. I always knew I wanted to be a lawyer or a psychologist. I knew I was never going to be a doctor. And but I always knew I was going to be a freelancer. I always knew that I wanted to work for myself. And I think my main shift in my career started when I was writing for Men's Health and GQ. And I've always wanted to write, and I think I've always been a communicator. So what I normally do is I do a lot of digital marketing and I do social media management, and that got me into companies doing training. So not only do I help companies market themselves online, but I also train their staff to help them to market themselves. And I think, if I had to summarize everything, I'm a communicator, so it doesn't matter if it's a written word or if it's a verbal word. So what I also do now is I go into companies, I help them to do better presentations, how to speak to people. And I love it when people say, oh, but I have got a terrible accent or I can't talk nicely like me, because I do say that. But I say, you know what? My job is not to teach you to speak how now, brown cow. My job is to teach you to speak confidently and comfortably, to speak in your own voice, but to communicate more effectively. And I think that is the one thing. People don't have time to listen to people ramble and waffle. So I like to teach people to edit what they're going to say, get this. That's how we actually got the name of the show, Sound Bites, get the message across. And I used to teach yoga, but then I decided that I preferred drinking and smoking too much. So that wasn't a very good career move. But I still practice yoga. I'm trying to think what else I do. So between digital marketing, social media management, corporate training, I also host a radio show called Sound Bites on Radio Today, Johannesburg.
Oh, I must listen.
You must. It's a very good show.
I've heard tell.
Well, yeah. Enough about me. What exactly do you do, Chris?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I'm. You and I are very much in the same boat, you know.
Okay, let's talk about me and I'm bored. Okay, no, I'm joking.
Gone from pillar to post. But for the main part, I'm a television and theatre producer, and I've spent the last 10 years mainly producing live soccer matches around the African continent, which everybody looks at me in shock horror when I say that. They're you and soccer, but yes, I do that. But then I also do corporate communications and marketing strategy, and which is great fun. And then as a sideline, we have a shop in Durban, in Ambilo, which is an urban farm stall, which we sell ethically produced farm-style goods.
Oh, that's stunning. Where do you get the farm-style goods then?
Mainly from – our target market is 150 kilometers around Durban. And so the Midlands, a lot of the Midlands stuff comes down. So it's fresh farm produce and all that sort of thing, which is really good. I mean, we even get milk now – that where you see the cream that has risen to the top of it. I mean, when last did you see that?
I was going to say, when was the last time you saw milk in a glass bottle?
Yeah, no, it's fabulous. It's great fun. So you know, it's a bit eclectic, but sort of communications is broadly and generally, but producing is my bread and butter.
But don't you find is that the more things that you do, the more things that you find that you can also do? It's like one thing snowballs
absolutely
into the other, to mix metaphors.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think it gives you a confidence to take on roles. Whereas if you said earlier you might be a lawyer or a psychologist, I think you often get very stuck in that role, and it's very hard to move beyond that. But if you look at your skill set, you're actually able to move beyond that, which is quite interesting.
I also find, this is the ironic thing, it really annoys me when people complain about unemployment and they talk about the fact that they can't find jobs. And I appreciate the fact that we do have a super inflated unemployment rate in South Africa, but I think start something, do something. Mm. And it almost feels selfish to say that I've got five jobs when some people don't.
Yes.
But then I also work for those jobs, and I didn't necessarily get them, I created them for myself. And one or two of my jobs don't even pay me. So it's not even a question of doing it for the money. It's not as I'm getting the money for doing the work. But there are other things that, ironically enough, this is the point that I was going to make, talking about quick soundbites. Nothing that I've ever tried to do has actually worked. Everything I do literally has just happened organically. Somebody said, can you do this? And I said, yes. Would you like to try this? And I said, yes. I mean, my short-lived, well, actually I was a yoga instructor, I think, for 7 years. And when I was marketing myself to do corporate yoga, I really hit my head against the brick wall. And then I just asked myself, if people are asking you to do the online marketing, why don't you do online marketing? And then somebody asked me, can you do a presentation? And I thought, why don't you do the presentation? If you can write, you can talk.
Yeah.
And I never overanalyzed it. And then once I realized, because I always believe the universe delivers what you need. And I thought, once I realized this is the energy that is coming towards me, I thought, let's put in the effort and take it on to the next level.
Absolutely. I just realized I also sell advertising space for a company called Lunchbox Media, which is all the gay publications. So I sell advertising space on gay publications.
And talking about a small world, we're just talking
our dear friend, Mr. Donovan Stell.
Donovan Stell is also our roving co-host from Cape Town.
That's
so, Donovan, we're talking and thinking about you too. So what are you doing with Lunchbox Media now?
Well, I'm busy. We've got five titles that we look at and we work. And I'm selling advertising space. A lot of it's digital, but there's a couple of magazines and things.
So stunning.
Great
and
fun.
If people want to get in touch with you?
You can contact me. I'm Chris at lunchboxmedia.co.za.
And that is to contact him for advertising space, not with obscene proposals.
No, you can do that too.
For obscene proposals, you can contact me at the word of Ed on Twitter or visit me on my blog, edward.chamberlainbell.com. We hope all of our listeners have a fantastic festive season. However you celebrate it, we hope you're surrounded by people that you love and, more importantly, people that love you back. And we'll be back with you next year in 2014.
Wow. Blessings and be safe.
Thank you.
Want to know what to eat, where to go, and who to know in Johannesburg and all around? Then join us on Soundbites every Saturday, brought to you by the Food Cops on Radio Today.